We're reminded that artists do not necessarily produce happy works when they are happy, or sad ones when their lives are going badly. In the summers of 1903 and 1904, Gustav Mahler was as happy as ever in his life, and though his gift for misery gets more attention, he had a great talent for happiness. In March 1902, he had married the gifted and beautiful Alma Schindler. One daughter was born in November of that year, and another in June 1904. His music was getting more performances and even seemed to be meeting with more understanding. His work at the Imperial Court Opera in Vienna, where he had been director since 1897, was going well. During these sunny, energy-filled summers, as an immensely busy conductor and administrator, he had to cram his composing into the summer months, Mahler wrote the darkest music of his life, the Sixth Symphony, which he himself may or may not have called the tragic, and the two final songs of the Kindertotenlieder, songs on the deaths of children. He imagined the finale of the Sixth Symphony as a scenario in which the hero is assaulted by three hammer blows of fate, the last of which fells him as a tree is felled. The summer of 1907 brought three such blows: his daughter's death, the discovery of his own severe heart disease, and the bitter end of his directorship of the Vienna Opera. As Alma insisted, the Sixth Symphony is Mahler's autobiography, written ahead of time. Was Mahler writing about himself? Was he writing about the apocalypse of 1914, about Auschwitz? Was he just writing a symphony? We know from Alma that Mahler was more engaged by his work on this piece than by any other in his life, and that at the first performance he was so afraid of the demons that he had unleashed in his music that he conducted badly. The Sixth is a work imbued with a tragic vision, where Mahler's other symphonies end in triumph, in quiet bliss, or at their darkest, in resignation and acceptance. And while even Kindertotenlieder draw to their close with a vision of the children at rest, affrighted by no storm, protected by the hand of God, the Sixth is unique in its tragic minor key conclusion. Mahler's ambivalence about extra musical meaning in his symphonies never went away. Concerning his first symphony, he wrote, "I should like to stress that it goes far beyond the love story on which it was based, or rather, which preceded it in the life of its creator. In that spirit, having suggested that the Sixth Symphony carries heavy emotional freight and that it has persistently shown power to provoke intense emotion in its listeners, the Sixth Symphony is one of the most admired and passionately loved symphonies by those who know their Mahler best." Words of Michael Steinberg from the notes for this recording. As it happens, award-winning pianist, conductor, and teacher Eugene Obelescu is feeling very fortunate indeed to have a chance to lead a performance of Mahler's Symphony No. 6 this weekend at Lehigh University in Bethlehem, where he has built the orchestra into an ensemble more than capable of rendering this work in all its power. And yet, even he is, in a certain sense, as we'll learn, looking ahead to the inevitable and wanting to realize his deepest musical experiences while he has such rich opportunities. The Lehigh University Philharmonic will perform Mahler's Symphony No. 6 this Friday and Saturday nights at 8 o'clock at the Zollner Arts Center. We had a chance to speak by phone with Eugene Obelescu about Mahler's Symphony No. 6 and why he is taking it on.
I'm starting to look very closely at bucket lists. And Mahler 6 is one of my biggest bucket lists. It's one of the greatest symphonies for the orchestral repertoire. And a number of years ago, there was a Mahler year, I think 2010, and we were asked to do a Mahler symphony, and I wanted to do 6. And other people talked me out of it because they said, well, it's too difficult, so we did number 1. And, of course, the orchestra at Lehigh has transformed quite a lot in the last 6 years, and we think that this is a good time now. And so we decided to tackle it. But we're doing it. It's a great piece. It's about an hour and a half long, and you don't get to see it often performed live because it needs gigantic forces. It's a humongous orchestration, that is just very, very challenging. The sheer numbers, we have like 10 horns, 6 trumpets, 4 trombones, 4 bassoons, 1 contrabassoon, 6 flutes, 4 oboes and an English horn, 6 clarinets, and that's just the wind. And, of course, the famous thing about the symphony is that Mr. Mahler instructed in the last movement to use a specific instrument that had not been built and has not ever been mass-produced. So everybody has to make their own. It's called a Mahler box. And there's a very large hammer, kind of like a Thor-type hammer, that hits this box in the last movement. The original score had 5 bots. Then by the first performance, it was reduced to 3, and then 1 was taken out. So there are 2 hammer strikes in the last movement. And we had to make a large, very, very large box for this piece and a hammer. So we've had our hands full.
And this is all not just because he was a megalomaniac and wanted to have lots of instruments. It was in service of some very deep wrestling with life and what it means to be alive and those sorts of things.
Yes, there are many sides to the story. One, universally existential situations, individual life of Mahler. Most people focus on the autobiographic. And then there's music history context. And although there were some personal situations that are kind of interesting, it's called a tragic symphony. The tragic element in the symphony is there's this dotted rhythm, which many audiences might recognize from the Star Wars theme. Dun, 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 da-da, you know. And, of course, Williams copies Mahler when he writes Star Wars. But you have da-da, dun, da-da, you know, this main theme that pervades the whole thing. And you have da-da, 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 these dotted rhythms of long, short, long, short, long, that pretty much infect the piece like a virus with tragedy. And so starting from Mahler's situation, you know, why was he so tragic? He was very happy at that time. People talk about the premonitions of things, the tragedies that were to happen and the 2 hammer blows. But the 2 major tragedies that happened to him, one of which was the death of his daughter, and then the second being his diagnosis of a heart ailment that was to kill him only a couple of years later. None of these had happened. So, in fact, he was as happy as could be. You know, he and Alma got a summer cottage somewhere outside Vienna, and they're happy. He hadn't been forced to resign out of the Vienna Opera Company yet, so he was as happy as can be. In fact, they had this at the cottage. He had like a little den on the hill where he went and composed, and supposedly this is where he composed the slow movement of this piece. And this is why we hear. You know, we had to find other instruments like specific type of herd cowbells that were used in herds in Germany and in Austria, and he used them in the symphony because he heard them. So as he was composing the slow movement, and so that's the personal side of Mahler, and you know, the context of what was happening. The larger context is that this is really the last romantic symphony, and it puts an exclamation point end of chapter to the School of Vienna. You know, the Viennese tradition from Haydn to Mozart to Beethoven to Schubert to Brahms to Bruckner. These composers embodied Vienna, and yet little by little Viennese culture was degenerating into all sorts of, you know, it had reached its terminus with, you know, Strauss, not Richard, the waltz people being so in vogue at that time. And I think the hammer, to me, is more like a kind of a destruction of that whole previous world order of the classical and the romantic Viennese tradition. So that's why this piece is really amazing. It's a terminus. So it's fantastic. If anybody hasn't heard it live, you have to hear it.
And we know sometimes they use the word irony or that dark comic sense. We heard it in the Funeral March movement with the animals in his first symphony. That comes into play here too, doesn't it?
Yes. And in fact, there is quite a lot of irony, but the irony in the speech, just as it was with the Frère Jacques movement in the first symphony, he's quoting also. He's quoting a lot of things in a symphony. And, of course, this is not the first symphony called Tragic. There was another tragic symphony. Well, we could call many symphonies tragic, right? I mean, Beethoven Fifth is really a tragic symphony. But they always triumph. If you look at the Fifth Symphony, it triumphs. And the Ninth Symphony also triumphs. There's a triumph of good over tragedy in most of Beethoven. Schubert Fourth is called the Tragic. It's, you know, actually has a name. And this symphony shares some of that tenet of Schubert. But there are really some amazing quotes. And he quotes some other Schubert, you know, the A minor piano sonata. Then a bunch of concertos that are really interesting that he quotes. He quotes a Rachmaninoff second in the slow movement. And of course, Rachmaninoff's second concerto was only premiered like 4 years before this was composed. The major quote is from the Liszt E-flat concerto, which is one of the major themes in the first movement. And then there's also a quote from Tchaikovsky piano concerto. And he even gives those to the horns. So these are not flippant quotes. These are like in your face. And in fact, the Liszt concerto quote is a major theme from the slow movement of the E-flat concerto, which comes back in the last movement and goes, dum, ba-dum, bom, 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 bom. Well, it's on the first page of the Mahler symphony, and he quoted over and over and over and over. And I was reading that, in fact, it's hard to imagine the symphony number 6 by Mahler as being followed by anything. But in fact, Mahler gave a concert in Munich with this symphony in the first half, and in the second half was Eugène d'Albert playing the Liszt E-flat concerto. So it's interesting that he actually programmed it on a program as if to make a point of some kind. So I think that to me, the quotes are possibly more than ironic. There isn't anything in your face as it is with the Frère Jacques being transformed into a funeral march. I think that was, he was far more brash and, you know, kind of a young whippersnapper when he wrote the first symphony. Not that he's much less here, but the quotes are not so in your face. You have to really be a musician or have studied music history quite profoundly to get most of these things. So this is a symphony that he writes for, on some level, for musicians. But of course, the popular appeal is just amazing because it puts you into a, when you listen to it, of just the sheer massiveness of the size of this piece, it puts you into a different place. It's such an amazing relic of the last turn of century. I think it was like around 1904, 1906. And so that's really what's interesting about it. Now, we always deal with pieces like this in terms of like, well, do you break it up? Many people break, for instance, the Verdi Requiem. And we found that this is really tough for us to do. It kind of disturbs the whole piece to have an intermission in the middle of it and then get back to the piece. You know, it works with opera, it works with theater. It doesn't work so much with one symphony. So we had to practically think about our audience, and we decided to start with a short piece, and we're starting the concert with the Emperor Waltz by Strauss, which is very short, and then we'll have a short intermission, and then we do the Mahler. So that people could, after they get to the concert hall, they have an ability to figure out what's going on and how long this is. And it's definitely an experience. And if your listeners haven't heard a full Mahler symphony live, it's something that you remember, just like, you know, Beethoven's Ninth, you remember that. So we picked that in particular because of Strauss and the waltz tradition in Vienna, overcoming serious music in many ways, but at the same time still celebrating the Kaiser. And of course, within 10 years of this symphony, there was no more Kaiser. The whole world collapsed in a great war, which became known to us as the World War. And the rest is history. So it's an interesting snapshot of the beginning of the last century in music history. And it's by far my favorite Mahler symphony, I'll say that too. So it's a great bucket list for me personally to conduct it, and I'm very, very happy. The orchestra is in great shape. A lot of interest in this piece. As I said, we needed a gigantic amount of forces, and a lot of people heard about this, community members, and they said, hey, I want to play. And so we're very, very appreciative and grateful to a large number of community people who basically just turned up and said, hey, I want to play horn. This is, you know, And I say to them, well, I'm so thankful for you doing this for us. And the response I get is, well, it's Mahler. What do you expect? Of course I'm going to do this. So there is a reverence to this composer that so many musicians have that, you know, it flattens a lot of discussion about practicality. So can I do this? Well, yes, I have to do it. So we're very happy to be presenting this, and the students are having a fantastic time. We've worked a whole semester on this piece, and we don't do this every year, needless to say. But we're very happy and cautiously optimistic about this weekend.
Lehigh University Philharmonic music director and conductor Eugene Obelescu, award-winning performer and conductor who has led the Lehigh Philharmonic for the past 6 years, speaking with us in anticipation of this week's performances of the epic Symphony No. 6 by Gustav Mahler in A minor, known as the Tragic Symphony. The performances will be held at the Zollner Arts Center on the Lehigh University campus in Bethlehem this Friday, December 9th, and again Saturday, December 10th at 8 o'clock each night. For more information on the web, lehigh.edu, lehigh.edu. Symphony No. 6 by Gustav Mahler, performed by the Lehigh University Philharmonic Orchestra under the direction of Eugene Obelescu, and that's Friday, December 9th and Saturday, December 10th at 8 o'clock each night, and that's at the Zollner Arts Center on the campus of Lehigh University in Bethlehem.